Okay, yes. And if you don't mind saying either who you are or sort of where you're from, that would be a little bit of information.
I went to law school. And I'm curious, I mean, I think that the indiscriminate capacity to access firearms in this country is a far greater threat than terrorism to American security, to the security of American lives today. But I'm curious because, I mean, I think the majority of Americans think that the right to bear firearms is a right of American citizenship, and yet all the proposals to reduce the death and destruction affected by firearms require some form of registration. How could you reconcile those initiatives, which are presumably a restraint on rights of citizenship, and how can you reconcile that with, for example, attack on the use of ID, on the requirement of IDs right. to travel, for example? I mean, I'm just mm-hmm. curious, is there a tension
right.
there?
Right. Very good question. By the way, I'm passing around a sign-up list, totally voluntary, but if you want sort of notice of other talks or things that I write, just put your name and your email on there. I appreciate that. Well, I didn't talk. I have a footnote in my book about the right to bear arms. And very simply, I argue that the right to bear arms is not a right of citizens, is not a right solely for citizens, and that it is not an individual right. I mean, contrary to the Heller decisions and the other decisions, if you look at the Second Amendment, the Second Amendment is part of the militia clause. This is a collective right to bear arms, and it has to do with the protection of the country and also the protection against standing armies. So I would not say that the right to bear arms is a right for citizens per se. It's a right for everybody, but only citizens can participate in the militia. So I wouldn't give the same kind of protections against identification requirements to the right to bear arms that I would propose for voting or for travel.
How would you characterize that position in the spectrum of American judicial opinion on the Second Amendment?
I would say that prior to the Heller decision, it's totally consistent. The previous court decisions were all that it was a collective right having to do with the militia, and it was not an individual right. And, you know, the courts, now, particularly now that Justice Scalia is off the courts, the court could modify that and has somewhat modified it already by allowing some regulation of firearms. So I think it's a counter tradition that could come to the fore again in the future. Okay. Other questions? Yes.
Is anyone on the no-fly list sued for the right to fly?
Yes. There are several cases about the no-fly list. When Muhammad B. Holder, I discussed them in my book, and people have indicated that very clearly they consider the right that being put on the no-fly list to be a violation. And Judge Franga, who's a district judge in Arlington, Virginia, has upheld that and has said that being put on the no-fly list is so debilitating to the opportunity to work and to travel that it raises fundamental constitutional issues. So I think that's exactly what it's all about. I didn't mention the no-fly list, but that's also discussed in the book. Okay. Yes, Archie.
I'm from the program in psychiatry and the law at Harvard Medical School. From a constitutional point of view, what do you think of the workarounds that now exist for presenting identification at the airport that if you don't have the standard ID, well, you can produce other things with your name on it, or else fill out a form basically identifying yourself, and then they will check to verify that. You presented that as a kind of, like right now, a kind of pragmatic sort of no man's land that kind of helps reconcile all of this. At the same time, it is requiring people to identify themselves, although not to provide, for example, digital images of themselves. So, what is your opinion of the constitutionality of that sort of, you know, like pragmatic kind of resolution?
Right. Well, I think you raise a very important point. The Beckman decisions and the other decisions about common carriers essentially say that anybody who can pay the fare needs to be carried on a common carrier. And some of you may know, and a few of you in this room may remember, that it used to be possible to fly without ID. It used to be possible to fly without going through metal detectors and all sorts of other things. But People Express Airlines, for instance, used to get on and you could pay cash, and people would never know who you are. So I think that there is some reasonable check for safety that you are not carrying a weapon or explosive, and that the least intrusive way of doing that is appropriate. But you don't need to know who people are in order to do that. The identification of people are is a whole different apparatus of intelligence. And it's one that, like getting phone records for everybody, everybody is suspected of being a threat until otherwise proven. And that's just a huge waste of resources. Some of the changes that have been made since 9/11, for instance, just hardening cockpit doors have reduced the likelihood of a lot of that. So I think it's, in one sense, it's good to have, not to have the requirement and be able to do it in other ways, but it would be better not to have an ID requirement in order to travel in the first place. Yes.
Moving forward, do you see there being more of a possibility of challenging the entire concept of identification as it relates to voting rights, or do you think with the recent state decisions to enact these photo ID requirements that there's more probability of success at, you know, attacking the idea that not only photo ID is necessary to vote, but certain forms of voter ID? I mean, I know that certain state legislatures have, you know, thought that even a student's university photo ID wouldn't be sufficient because essentially you need to get voters on a driver license or their state issued ID card. I mean, do you see as kind of a second order issue after identification, you know, is assumed to be something that we can live with, that photo ID might be a special category, or do you think that none of it, you know, has a constitutional basis?
Right. I would argue that none of it has constitutional basis. That ID requirements cut off the constitutional basis of being able to exercise rights because you are a citizen. If there are essentially non-intrusive requirements in ambiguous situations, then, you know, there's some justification for that. I mean, minimally, in places like Massachusetts and Illinois, You show up to vote if you're registered to vote, and if they're not sure, they'll ask you your address. And so you give them your address, and then they might ask you to match the signature. That's not particularly intrusive, though it is some form of identification. The issue really becomes when it's got to be a specific kind of identification, like a real ID, both because it's unitary, and I have a chapter in my, or a section in the book about, can there ever be a democratic form of identification? And I argue no, there actually can't be. But the example that you gave is a good one. Why can't students use their IDs if there's an ID law? Well, it's because they don't want students voting. you know, built into this kind of ID requirement is the potential for discrimination. And the solution is not to have one ID for everybody. The solution is not to have IDs or to have the lowest possible level to encourage the exercise of rights. And I would encourage particularly both of you to think about, you know, writing a paper on this, you know, looking into this further. If people are interested in internships, you know, you can see me afterwards. Also, I will stick around afterward to sign the book if anybody wants to get a copy of the book. And I, you know, I wrote it to be engaging, so I hope it will engage some people. Okay, other questions? Yes.
You spoke a lot about the right to vote and the right to travel. You alluded to the right to work, but you didn't talk so much about the right to work. Is there anything
to Okay, well, I don't call it the right to work. I call it the right to employment. And by that I mean that one of the privileges and immunities of citizenship is the right to take employment. It doesn't imply that you are guaranteed a job or the government guarantees you a job. It's just if you want to pursue a profession or somebody offers you a job, you're able to take that. And there are a number of court decisions which talk about pursuing professions that is a privilege and immunity of citizenship. In that regard, you should be able to, you know, take the employment if it's offered or you create it. The ID requirement is the same sort of thing, that you can't do that. And the e-verification system requiring a real ID adds to that dimension the same thing as the voter ID and the right to travel. So most people don't realize that taking employment is a fundamental right of citizenship. But that's in part why I wrote it as a chapter in my book. I'm curious whether any of the people who are here have thought about these issues, about the right to travel or the right to employment prior to coming to this talk. Have any of you ever, you know, wondered about that when you've been asked for ID, or wondered about that when you've been considering your citizenship? One of the people that came to my talk yesterday said, you know, it's always bothered me that when people ask for ID to do something so fundamental as travel, you know, that restriction occurs and people don't think about it. So I'm, you know, asking you to think about it. So besides this gentleman here, did any of the other people here think about those issues? Have you ever discussed it in any of your classes, IDs or citizenship? No? Okay, this is sort of terra incognita for everybody.
For that, we're deeply thankful, Richard, so, to get us to think about these things. I will say that, you know, on the voting side, you know, it's obviously that going in to vote unfettered is one of the greatest marks of our democracy. And it's a very strange thing, you know. For anyone who hasn't been required to show an ID upon voting, you should contemplate what that would be like.
Attorney General Designate Sessions indicated in his hearings he thought that was a great idea. And federalism will come to the fore again when the federal government tries to impose upon Massachusetts a voter ID law. So think about that. Now the states have a right to say, no, we don't want that. If the federal government tries to impose it on everybody, you'll get a lot more pushback. Anyway, I want to thank you all. I will stick around here for questions. If anybody wants me to sign a book, the coupe is out front, so please just go get a book.
Cash, credit, checks, whatever.
And then come back in here if I haven't come out, and I'll be happy to inscribe it to you personally. Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.